make believe, let's not pretend. We might be ill, but we're on the mend. It never starts, it never ends. Welcome to Craig and Friends. Welcome to Craig and Friends. Welcome to Craig and Friends.
Hey everyone, how you doing out there? Before we get into my chat with Rusty, which was taped last February in a cafe on the grounds of a cemetery in London, I want to let you know a few things. First off, I'm half vax now. In the last 24 hours, I got my first dose. I hope that you are on the same path, if not already ahead of me. Also, I'm really thrilled to share this chat with Rusty with you because he's really one of the most influential people of the last 30, 40 years of pop music. If you think about the Blitz Club, the impact that had, the Camden Palace, which he ran and DJed. He DJed the Blitz Club, of course, as well, in case you didn't know. And, of course, as one of the co-creators of Visage, I mean, do I need to go on? Well, guess what? We're going to get into that and a whole lot more in our chat. Also, Rusty's story is one of never giving up and always coming back, even when people count you out, even when you almost count yourself out. So there's a lot of aspects to his story that I think are perfect for right now. And his energy is quite something. Basically, you're in for a treat, as always. But before we get into that treat, I'm going to tell you about patreon.com/Craig and Friends, which is the place for you to go to get loads of bonus episodes and support the show. Also, you get early ad-free versions of these episodes. Yes. Oh, and have you heard my new show with Chrissy Chepeka? It's Chrissy and Craig. Very easy to find. There's a link in this episode description. Just click on that. Check out the show. Subscribe and set yourself up for delight. Between the time we recorded and released this, Rusty has put together a fabulous album called Blitzed, which is the soundtrack to the documentary of the same name. So pick up Blitzed, the album, go watch Blitzed, get Blitzed, all of it, and enjoy my chat with Rusty Egan.
My direct debit didn't go through on someone, and they wrote to me today, you know, I couldn't believe it. One direct debit didn't go through, you know? You know why?
Why?
I think it's 28 days in a month or something. 29 days in a month.
That's
now.
Because it's a leap year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think you miss a day or something.
And it throws it all off.
Yeah. But I wouldn't mind, but they immediately, you are now, you know, Mr. Bad. You know.
Oh, well, right. Because there's no, people don't think, oh, there must be a reason why.
Yeah, there's no reason. No, it's a computer.
You know, no, but like there must be a screw up. There must have been a glitch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we're so used to now being like, hey, you're trying to fuck me over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I like to do a little intro for everyone, kind of a game show type intro. Friends, on this episode, I am pleased to present a new romantic pioneer, architect of some of the most influential pop culture of the late 70s and early 80s. A survivor of not only the vicissitudes of show business, but also drug addiction, dental devastation, and so much more. Please put your hands together and join me in giving a warm and wet Craig and Friends welcome to our guest, Rusty Egan.
Wow. I've never been introduced like that before.
That's good to hear. It's good to hear.
I'm still going through all of them. Number one, dental is a continued, very expensive
proposition.
So, we're going to need to do this, and it's going to be like £8,000, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be weeks of visits and endless...
I don't care weeks of visits or anything. I just care about the money.
Is it pain, too? I mean, does it...
No, I don't care about pain either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I reiterate you there in that department? I just think of 20-year-old kids going to war. That's fucking pain.
Yeah, it is. And so it's good. It's
knowing
good
that you
mind.
Might not be here tomorrow.
Sure.
And knowing that you're just going to land on the beach and you're going to have all sorts of artillery coming straight at you. And you're like, what have you got? A rifle?
Right. And the terror and not knowing.
And the terror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also missing everyone that you love.
Everything.
Completely,
your
everything.
Whole life can ding. Or, you know, someone's got to get up the beach and take out that. Someone's got to do the job. So somebody has to go, come on, guys, we can do this. Well, no one's going to do that to you. You have to do that to yourself every day.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because we were talking before we started rolling about being an aspirational society or aspirational music and things like that.
Yeah.
And the new romantic era is sort of the most comprehensive aspirational youth culture movement.
It stopped at like 1999, you know, after grunge, you know, it stopped.
Yeah.
And I was like scratching my head. What? What happened?
Where's the next thing?
Yeah. Well, your introduction to who I am. And before we spoke about who I am, I kind of said I'm the invisible man because I'm not attributed to being a DJ in 1979 making records. That DJs in 1979 in Detroit, Chicago, were playing.
Right.
And that Frankie Crocker at WBLS in New York were playing.
Yeah, which is a wildly influential show. Like, it was the show, right?
The
Like, when you would travel, I imagine, to New York, I remember reading about people taking cassettes, being like, oh, we're in New York on tour.
You have to record Frankie. They played my records, and I made a lot of electronic records. But I also was a DJ, as in went to Paradise Garage because of the DJ. You know, and went to meet Mark Kamins at Danceteria. We became friends, and through him, we both did Madonna. And now 9 out of 10 people don't know that.
Talk about the track that she worked on.
Right. Well, she only had one track called Everybody, and she was, she just was like, I know what I'm doing. No guy was having her. She was having the guy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
She
was an independent woman.
Totally independent woman, which I love. And I love what she's about. She controls everything. And I worked with you too last year, or the year before, 2018. And I'm like sitting here like dreaming that I'm going to get the call. You know, hey, we've got some songs and, you know, because... Unforgettable Fire was sound engineered by Mark Wallace, who's a friend of mine, and he lives in Ibiza, and he's got the villa and the studio and all the trappings.
Yeah.
But he and I were like teenage friends.
Okay. Where'd you grow up?
In Harrow, which sounds really lovely.
Uh-huh.
But I always tell people I live in Kensington and Chelsea now, the place where Grenfell Tower burnt down, you know.
Okay.
We have poor people everywhere. One side of the road... You couldn't afford to live there. The other side of the road. Yeah. Nobody puts in any fire alarms. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, like the town I grew up in. My parents bought there before it was sort of developed. And then in the area, in Massachusetts, if you just said, oh, I'm from this town, people automatically would think, oh, like loaded. But we, you know, they bought before it was McMansion land.
Yeah. When I was in, back to U2, when I was in Dublin with U2 in the 80s. I met a lot of beautiful people who came from a certain part of town. And then there were other people with a strong Irish accent. And they were like, they're from the north side. They're from the south side.
Yeah, yeah.
And there'd be like a north and south divide. You
yeah,
know?
Sure. A bias because, just because of where you're from.
Yeah, because the rich people live there. And,
yeah.
And it would separate you. I would really hate to be a rich kid, teenager, dressed like grunge, hanging around with poor rock and roll guys.
Right.
And then get found out.
Right, exactly.
Hey, he's got health insurance.
Get him. Yeah. Well, it's funny, and you were one of the rich kids, the band with Midge, right? And Glenn Matlock from the Sex Pistols.
The C was a sickle, as in hammer and sickle. It represented unification of, like, Russia. As in, we were all poor, but we had a talent. So I did like dozens of records, Africa, Bambaataa, and hardly anyone knows. So
Time Zone, right?
Time Zone, Wild Style. But all the music was called Wunderwerke, and Wunderwerke's on my solo album. I even went on tour with Midgeur, and most of the audience don't really know who I am, you know? And it's that kind of thing. I introduced myself.
Maybe it's changing now. Maybe they know.
No. I've never wanted to be up the front, which is why the band's called Visage, and my doorman from my nightclub was on the front page.
Yeah.
That came back to sting me really badly.
And I wanted to ask you about that. I was thinking about that today, because there's a really strange thing when you're the creator of something, but you're not identified as it. And but yet Steve, who was also a very close friend of yours, right?
Yeah, we shared a flat together 5 years.
Yeah, and then later, there's you guys have a falling out for nigh on 20 years.
No, we didn't fall out for 20 years at all.
Okay, then that's my mistake, because I watched that program where the two of you reunited.
Well, we reunited.
Yeah, okay.
But in the 20-year period, because I had basically lost everything, that's my drug addiction period, was being robbed and home.
Okay, yeah.
End of everything.
Okay.
So you watch the movie, you know, you're riding high, then your best friend cheats on you, then your wife cheats on you, Then you got the drowned rat scene.
Yeah, right. Right.
You're crying raining, in the rain. And crying like, in the
what
rain.
What happened? I don't. Where is everything? I can't. Yeah. There's newspapers flying around. Yeah.
And then you end up in a bar with some cool guys and you're getting wasted. And you don't normally get wasted. You wake up with a beautiful woman. You wake up with a beautiful woman. And you go, I can't have this. I'm a married guy. I've got to get my life back together. And then you go back home. The locks change. And you can't even get in your own house.
Yeah. They won't even answer the door.
Yeah. And she's with your buddy. I went back to the girl. So I wrote a song about it. You know, it's on my album. It's called Ballet Dancer.
Before that, leading up to that, and give people a sense of the rise to the top. And then what happened after that? So we know what happened right around that time.
Do people want to know this shit on this?
Absolutely.
No.
Yeah, well, I want to know it. And so basically the show is things I'm interested in.
Well, the people are interested in the music. They don't want to know the sob story.
Why don't they want to? No. They want to hear about, I want to hear about how you started a nightclub and you started with your friend and you guys pioneered some stuff that changed pop culture. Well, so people want to know about that.
I think without being arrogant, I'm going to be arrogant.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I played all this music in a club.
Right.
In Soho originally, which was a rent boy club. You went there to pick up a boy, but you were wearing a suit and were Giles from Accounts. And you slipped off into this little club where you met boys that were like Steve Strange and Marilyn and Boy George, and you offered them money. That was the old days.
Sure.
In Soho. I took over one of those clubs. Because I'd had a conversation with Steve Strange and I'd been out with him to all the gay clubs.
Sure. And you and Steve first met?
In the Rich Kids. He was a fan.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He was a fan of the Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
And he basically, I got nowhere to stay. Well, I'm struggling to pay my rent like every other drummer in a band.
Right.
But, you know, we go out to clubs, we get in, we get free drinks, you know. Sure, you can crash on my half of the bed. I'm sleeping with a gay guy.
Yeah.
But there was never, ever, because I was like that, wasn't I? The bloke.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that, go.
Yeah.
But I loved the gay world.
Yeah, exactly.
And I loved
the
music. I loved David Hockney. And
sure.
And I loved all the artists. And I loved the Sombrero Club. Where they made Adam and the Ants video and music, but it's where David Bowie met his designer. I met his hairdresser. She organized a night where I had an evening with David Bowie in a flat in Soho.
Oh, amazing.
And we discussed everything.
Yeah.
So I'm just like a fan, really.
Well, yeah.
So you meet David Bowie, you're a fan. But I went to Dusseldorf and met Kraftwerk because I'm a fan. When I listen to songs and I listen to music, I can listen to James Blake, who I love, or I can listen to James Blunt, who I love.
Right.
Now, 9 out of 10 people go, oh, James Blunt, blah, 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 right? And you go, well, that's kind of like production values, instrumentation, presentation.
Yeah.
But that song is still there.
Yeah.
That could have been Jacques Brel, mate.
Well, people oftentimes get this thing about guilty pleasures and like, oh, we can't like this if you like that. That's all bullshit.
I want to kiss you all over. Exile. Yeah. Till the night closes.
Written and produced by my friend Mike Chapman.
I love
who people
that.
Know in the show. And do you know
Chinny
Mike?
Chinny Chap.
Yeah. Do you know Mike?
No, I know Chinny Chap. Well, they were in LA.
Okay, we're going to all have dinner then sometime. Because
no, you know him?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He did the suite.
Oh, yeah. That's
I
right.
I know what he
Tina,
did.
Tina, do you know all about him?
Chinny
you know
Chap.
All of his
I know
stuff.
All about him.
Yeah. And no, we're gonna have a lovely time.
Oh, I
yeah.
love that record.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a wonderful man.
Yeah.
And not only that, I just, he has so many great songs. That yeah. I'm a student of his stuff, and I'm still finding out, like, that song by Smokey, I'll Meet You at Midnight.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
I saw Smokey. Saw them live. I love their sound.
And he's the architect of that whole sound. Yeah. Him and Chris Norman are making a new album.
I know Chris, the singer.
Yeah. He's, they're
massive in Germany.
And they're making a new album right now.
Wow. If you're, like, in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And you're looking out at Trump America.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I hate this. I hate where I'm from. I hate everything about it. You just have to ask yourself questions. How can I make that change?
Yeah.
There's art in everything. There's art in suburbia. There's art in Groundhog Day. You have to look at it. You know, even the guy from Groundhog Day was in that movie directed by that young girl.
Lost in Translation.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's art in nothing.
Yeah.
There's art. You can just sit in emptiness and quietness and you can find something unique. people listen to this show, 9 out of 10 will go, Steve Strange, The Blitz Club, yeah. And I'll go, that's my idea. Oh, I see all these people. They dress up every night. They go to clubs. They love the music. They are tripping the light. Fantastic. Why don't we make him the face of the music?
Right.
When you say make somebody the face of the music, when you look at Eminem, he tells you, I've got a thesaurus. And when I listen to and watch the documentary about Taylor Swift,
yeah,
get a thesaurus. Your songs are the nursery rhymes of a child. I love you as a girl and an entertainer. Yeah. And
the vibe lovely. And all that. Yeah, their message essentially.
Standing up for LGBTQ in Tennessee. I love everything. But your songs suck. And Ed Sheeran. This is my thing. It's the same in every genre. I've sat in the clubs. I've sat with those people. I've been out with all those people.
Yeah.
I had everyone back at my house after the after party.
Yeah. Pete Townsend overdosed at your club.
Right? Well, he came to my house quite a lot. And then Steve and me went back to his house a lot.
Yeah.
And he had a studio and, you know, all that shit. Yeah. Up all night crap and drugging. Yeah. Sure. Pete's a friend of mine today. He's still a friend of mine today. And he survived. He made it.
Yeah. And Pete's still plugged into the current culture like that you are.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
He's
like,
wide open to it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's about staying open.
Yeah.
And never dismissing stuff just because it's young girl,
well,
or it's this or that.
Well, I do dismiss monosyllabic stuff.
Well, that's different. That's a quality. That's not just because it's of a different era.
Well, I tell you what happened to me the other day on social media. I'm a DJ. No, I'm not. I'm actually a musician and a writer and a producer. But hey, it's easy to DJ, right? Bloody easy.
Is it easy? Because just like DJ Fat Tony,
I gave him his first job.
Right. And he told me that. I just taped with him.
He?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm
talked about.
They normally don't.
Oh, no. He's very upfront about how you guys.
Yeah, he said he's rubbish. I'm betting you. And he came on and played John Travolta. I went, no. I was playing Frank Goes to Hollywood, which he probably hadn't even heard of at that time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was friends with Holly Johnson. And I played all Bobby Orlando, and I played Divine, and
Bobby's
I played
the best.
Flirts, and I played all that stuff. And then I had put him on Fat Tony. He goes, you're the one that I want. I'm like, no.
But you know, I have a night. I DJ, and I play both Bobby O and You're the One That I Want. And it's,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And you play Fascinated. I'm fascinated by your love, boy. It's an amazing tune from that era.
But I like the both of them, and they can work together well.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, Tony and I were talking about...
Did you know this?
What?
Did you know that New Order, Blue Monday,
yeah,
in the Bobby Orlando world, Peter Hook took the bass line from a track I played in the Blitz Club.
Which track?
Which went... Dang, dang. We just talked about a bass player taking an idea from a film score and incorporating it into bass and putting it to a beat that could have been Bobby Orlando. That's kind of difficult and creative. And then to write on top of that, how does it feel to treat me as you do? You put all of those pieces together. You extend the mix with Arthur Baker. You flip the B-side and call it The Beach. And you orchestrate it more or less, heavier synths. And you make the biggest selling 12-inch dance record of all time. Or you press pay.
Yeah.
Play.
Yeah.
For that record.
But you do both things.
Yeah, but not only did I press play, I segued the B-side and the A-side. And I synced up a TR-8 drum machine in the Camden Palace in 1980-something. And I had a Mini Moog in the Camden Palace. And I used to take my records away from the actual tune and people continued dancing to me. My bass lines, my drum machines, little cowbells. Then I brought in the next flip side of the record and I used it as a sort of a bridge.
Yeah.
So, but, and I had a recording studio at the time. Now me sitting here and thinking I'm going to perform the music of Visage in 2020 without Steve Strange, without Midgeur, without Dave Formula. How am I going to do that? Now, how am I going to do that?
How are you going to do that?
Well,
yeah.
Exactly. How do you think Ed Sheeran presses all those buttons? All he's doing is looping.
Right.
Just looping the intro, looping the... looping. Looping is just what you do as a DJ.
Yeah,
you loop
right.
It and extend it and add it, and all the toys are here. So I thought, 1980-220. What does that mean, Rusty? Well, that means that in 1980, what you couldn't do in 220, you can. And I was trying to do something that you couldn't do. How does that drum machine trigger that bass line? It can't. You have to do it by hand. And then they invented MIDI.
Yeah.
Ah. Oh, now I can MIDI the two synths together. That's right. So bottom line is, I've thought about doing Visage today, the music that I did 40 years ago.
Right.
All the tracks that I made were always searching. Did you hear R-E-R-B? R-E-R-B, which is the flip side of Shock. I did the glitter band, totally electronic, called Shock. But that was a dance troupe. I saw them in a club. I went up to them and I said, who does your music? I said, we just pick it. So I said, why don't you make your own? Same thing.
Yeah.
I got a guy called Richard Burgess. Ever heard of him? He was the guy who started house music. He made Colonel Abraham's Trapped.
Oh, okay.
That no, that's was the tune.
Yeah.
That guess who stole it? Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, how does trap go? Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
Okay.
Stock Aitken and Waterman. It's Pete Waterman sitting here now. Thieves. Just thieves. You know, you spin me round. You know, all the hits, Kylie, all the hits, all stolen. Not the top line songs.
Right.
The idea for the song.
Sure.
I did So Many Men, So Little Time. What's that?
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
With Sunita's mum, right? I signed the DJ out of heaven.
Okay.
He was the guy who produced Take That. I mean, finding people that are really creative in a little bar and then saying, hey, what do you want to do? Oh, if I could get in a studio. So I guess what I did to him?
What?
I brought a 12-inch copy into heaven of Frank Goes to Hollywood, Relax, white label. He put it on the deck. He listened to it. He came back. He gave it to me. He said, no good. So I said, Ian Levine.
Yeah.
Why is it no good? He said, I only play 126 BPM. I play high energy music.
Uh-huh.
It's 114. It's no good. I said, Ian, this is a gay club. There's 1,500 gay guys out there. Every one of them will love this tune.
Right.
He goes, Rusty, it's the wrong BPM. I said, go off piste.
Yes, that's right.
Just go off piste.
Yeah.
Do you think I don't know what I'm doing? I had the counterbalance down a road. I was already doing Madonna. I was already doing Visage.
Yeah.
Like, this
you
is kinda it.
Have a good track record.
I kinda have a good track record.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He pushed it back in my face. Said, no way. Guess what record he made? High energy.
That's
your
right.
Your love is lifting me higher.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Fucking ripped it off. If he hears this interview, he'll be furious.
That's right. He could come on and respond.
I took him out of heaven and got him back into Trident Studio. And then I went in the studio, the first track, and it was So Many Men, So Little Time. That's what I heard. And we programmed the drums, you know. I also did Nona Hendrix, which was in a film in America called Summer Lovers.
I think I have the soundtrack, but I don't know if I
love a band from LA called The Midnight.
Uh-huh. I don't know them.
You don't know them?
No.
All they are is like that movie.
Oh,
they're like,
okay.
They're like Risky Business.
Oh, okay.
A band that sounds like Risky Business.
Uh-huh.
And they even have an album where a girl finishes work in a bar, walks to a coin box, puts money in the phone box, and the guy calls, hey, you want me to come over? I've just finished work. Like a movie. I mean, their records are great. I went to see them. Their live show ruined it for me. But I know why it ruined it for me, because of the money. They can't do the production they need to do. The sax is amazing on the record. But I presume that the sax bloke on the record isn't the bloke that's going to tour.
Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I remember seeing Urge Overkill and being so disappointed, and then I found out the drummer's not the drummer on the record.
You get things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it ruins it. It's terrible, yeah.
And then the keyboard player was like a kind of, looked like a lifeguard on Venice Beach in 1982. And he had the muscles and the T-shirt. I didn't like it.
Put you off, yeah.
So exactly when I just told you about recreating the music of Visage 40 years later, we're all going to be in line. There is no star.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, it's about the music.
But if I can get GoPros on our equipment,
yeah,
then you can see us doing it.
Right.
And this is all very important to me. And I go and see bands like The Cure, and I'm just watching Robert Smith and some blokes. And then that's what I call all of them now. Simple Minds. They're not Simple Minds. I'm a friend of Derek Forbes. Uh-huh. Go and see him.
Okay.
If you want to hear Simple Minds, go and see the drummer.
So is he not with... what's the drummer, Mel?
They left. They're all gone.
So it's just Jim Kerr and...
Well, I don't get it, right? I
don't go see Wang Chung unless you know both of them are there. They were doing a package tour,
yeah.
Right? And so they had a night off, so they were at Viper Room. And it was billed Wang Chung's Cutting Crew. It should have been Wang Chung and members of Cutting Crew because...
It was a singer.
No.
No, he's in London.
And there's a blonde... The blonde guy from Cutting Crew doesn't look that dissimilar. So for 3 minutes...
Yeah, they all do that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was watching it and I'm like, something seems
and
off.
Wet.
Oh, okay. Did they
got
not...
some bloke who looks like Marty Pillow. It goes on and on. Terrible. This is an area. I don't know if you've got the time in this interview.
Oh, we got all the time in the world. Yeah.
Okay. Well, why is Rusty Egan performing Steve Strange's music? Why is Midgeur performing Steve Strange's music? Have you seen the Midgeur 1980 Visage Vienna tour? Well, Rusty Egan was on it for the first 22 dates.
Uh-huh.
But as second drummer, as in, they got a drummer. It's called Midgeur's drummer. Midgeur and some blokes. So Midgeur and some blokes go around the world performing Midgeur's music.
Yeah, which is okay because
He's not saying I'm Ultravox. He's not saying I'm Visage.
He's been
saying
upfront.
I'm Midgeur.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So why do people even say, why is he performing Steve Strange's music? Because he's not. He's performing his music.
Exactly.
Right, let's get that clear.
Yeah, exactly. There's a difference. But and then when you deceive people, then you disappoint them.
Yeah, when you get that lookalike. Okay. Right. If Rusty Egan went on stage and DJ'd and played all the records that he remixed and mixed and created.
Yeah.
Including U2, LaRue, you know.
Yeah, the list goes on.
The list goes on, all right? Yeah. Visage, everything, right? Sure, I could DJ an 80s set incorporating a load of my own music. But you might say, can you play Blondie? Oh, can you play Blancmange? Oh, can you play Kraftwerk? Oh, can you play Madonna?
Yeah.
So why would I go and DJ a DJ set with nearly all my own music? When I can go and DJ an 80s DJ set.
From all over Japan. Yeah.
You know, play Giorgio Moroder, play, you know, We'll Always Be Together and have everyone loving it.
Yeah, yeah.
I go, no, I want you to hear my song.
No, because that's the ego and it's
exactly.
Nonsense. Yeah.
So I don't do that. I go and do exactly what they want, you know, and play Small Town Boy. And I play Enola Gay.
Yeah.
And everybody just loves
it. Having a wonderful time. But that's what it's about.
Yeah. But you go to my Mixcloud and you hear a load of stuff. You go, wow, what's that? I didn't know that. You know, that's the place for me to do that. And then I have a radio show where I've discovered a dozen bands that are then touring with Midgeur, Human League, Erasure. Because I'm like now bigging up Depeche Mode to take Empathy Test. So I remixed some of these bands. I made an album, a collaborations album. It's called Welcome to the Remix, where I work with all these people and remix them, produce them, write with them. So I'm shining a light on them. Now, I'm in a cemetery and Jim from Simple Minds is worth 50 million quid and I'm worth not even 100 grand.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Nothing. My publishing makes me nothing. All right. I don't make any money out of music. I make money out of being a DJ. If I was worth 40 million quid, I would not be going out on the road with 200 quid a night musician. I would be going, Mel, the boys, let's get the band back together. Yeah. Guys, let's do it. I don't care if it's going to cost me 2 grand, 3 grand.
Yeah.
I want you.
Yeah, you want the original
thing. I want the original guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I saw a poster that named every member of Simple Minds and Mick McNeil was on keyboards, right? You know what I mean? I was going, Mel Gaynor on drums. Oh, my God, you know. Well, that would be Simple Minds. So what? It didn't gross the amount of money for the singer and the guitar player.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because you're going to be in a bloody grave in 20, 30 years?
Yeah. I want to get into band dynamic because this is what we're talking about now is about how ego overrides the ultimate quality goal. But
can
yes,
I just
please.
Stop you there? You two are an example of that.
Okay.
You two are what Simple Minds should be. And their audience have been with them for 40 years. And even Led Zeppelin split up because they couldn't replace that drummer. And this is the difference.
Yeah.
That's why I'm worth nothing. Now, go on, carry on.
Well, you know, we're talking about that. And yeah, like you two made the smart move. Everything was split four ways.
And Ultravox.
Yep, there you go. The trouble started to brew with Visage when what? Because you guys...
There was no trouble. I'm a DJ in a club.
Yeah.
And I'm a drummer. I'm only DJing in the club because Rich Kid split up. So Midge gets a phone call from Phil Lynott. Can you jump on the Concorde and learn the whole set? So Midge says, project's on hold. Billy says, Gary Newman has invited me on his tour. Project's on hold. John McGeoch, right? She's in the Banshees. Someone wants John McGeoch.
Yeah.
So basically, me and Steve were running this club, so we had enough money to live.
Yeah.
And I was writing songs. So, you know, I went to Berlin and I wrote Blocks on Blocks, looking over Dimora, the wall. I had words, I had ideas. I had, you know, Moon Over Moscow.
Yeah, yeah.
I had all these ideas and I'm DJing. I'm playing music by Yellow Magic Orchestra and I'm playing music by Yellow. I'm trying to get hold of all these bands, all these people. I'm promoting Soft Cell. I'm doing everything. I'm really busy. So the Visage album took a year to record. When we made the album, we all agreed, written, arranged, and produced by Visage. Six ways. Everything was agreed and done. Billy comes back from the tour with the idea for Fade to Grey, which I then go, get my girlfriend to talk on it. That'd be beautiful. I got an idea. Give it four to the floor and a hi-hat. Okay, let's do that. I'll do this massive drum. We do a whisper, Fade to Grey. You know, I'm involved in everything. And don't forget, I'm thinking, I'm in for a share of everything.
Of course.
But none of us thought like that.
Yeah, it you wasn't just, about, well, I'll hold this back because I'm
no,
not going to make the...
Like
yeah, yeah.
21, right?
Yeah.
Now, you just say, we're all splitting everything.
Right.
So anyway, the whole album's done. It's all finished. I'm playing Fade to Grey in the Blitz Club. Everyone's coming up to me saying, I love this tune. I'm going, it's us. It's our record. Spanner Ballet have sort of... haven't even made a record. I introduced them to Richard Burgess and they start to do, to cut the long story short. Anyway, no one, Boy George jealous. Everybody hates everybody. Bitching. Steve's going to make a record.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do the cover. I'm taking this photograph. So off he went doing his cover. We're going to get a video. We didn't have any money. We had nothing, you know.
Right.
Anyway, manager comes back, Thin Lizzy's manager, and says, here's the deal. Midge Billy and the bloke from Gary Newman wrote Fade to Grey.
Oh.
And the dancer, I go, yeah. Well, that's just you and Midge, right? Because you already done that. And I went, yeah, all right. But Midge is 75% of that because we manage him.
Oh.
Yeah. So basically, thank you, Chris Morrison, who went on to manage Blur. You came in and you finished Visage with your greed to manage Ultravox.
Gotcha.
But we shut up. We went, oh, well, Midge wrote it. He wrote the
so
words.
So what's the big deal?
What's
you
the
know?
Big deal?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't like the dance a bit. It's fucking instrumental. But if you're their manager and you want to do that, you woke me up. You woke me up. But anyway, sure, we'll sign that. Let it go. That was my alarm call to, well, that manager loves you.
Yeah.
Or does he love Midge and Billy?
Yeah.
It's going to be over.
Uh-huh.
Because the Ultravox had done Vienna by now.
Right, right.
And I was with them in LA, 1979, at a Whiskey A Go-Go. And I was staying at the Tropicana. And Midge and I were going down to Orange County to Disney World with a couple of girls that we'd met. Valley girls. And we were singing Happy Days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're just lovely. We were really best friends.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, the manager did what he did, but we went, yeah, all right, fuck it. He wrote all the words. Yeah.
So what's the big deal?
And, yeah, what's the big deal? Yeah. You know, great. And not only that, I got a phone call, join the Skids.
Okay.
So I made the Skids album and went on tour.
Yeah.
So, and he went off with Ultravox. You know, we were all in other bands.
Yeah, and you're all busy and moving.
And the manager was like, hey, guys, this record is flying in France. Oh, yeah, you're getting heavy rotation. Germany are loving it. What? Yeah. And basically, we're all surprised.
Yeah, yeah, shocked. Yeah. Because you're making something that I imagine you think this is going to go down well at the Blitz.
Yeah.
You know?
And make Steve, famous. the brother of my girlfriend said, hey, man, all over France, they're talking about who's that girl. She didn't get anything. And yeah. I'm a lawyer. So I went, you know what? You better call the manager. And I support you 100% because he is a...
Yeah. You can anyway. Say you can say that word. It's not yeah. it's not the BBC. We can say that.
So yeah, but I don't need to. So the point
see you next
was,
Tuesday, essentially, the point, is what you're
yeah,
saying.
The
yeah,
the point was he was, you know, he smiled at me for 30 years. He hated me.
Uh-huh.
Real, to be real.
The manager.
Well, yeah, but all I tell you what, I tell you who hates me. People that did bad to me.
Yeah.
Only people that do bad to me.
Because they know they did bad.
And I am not quiet. And people keep sending me messages on social media saying, why are you so horrible about Steve Strange? I said, well, we're sitting in a cemetery where my wife is. And she left us in 2011. And in those years where we had nothing, Steve Strange received all John McGeoch's royalties.
Really?
Steve Strange royalties, Dave Formula's royalties, Rusty Egan's royalties.
Yeah.
And he lied and lied.
Wow.
And then... I didn't say anything when we did that reunion thing.
Sure.
We'd had a meeting where he agreed, okay, I'll pay 50% of what I make uh-huh. from the next Visage album, number
okay.
four.
The Hearts and Knives album?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll pay 50% of that to pay back the money I owe. And I said, okay, I've written some songs. And I submitted a half-written song, Evermore, which features Emily Kavanagh from Nightclub, a band from LA that I love. That was the first song that I wrote. When I say I wrote, I write with Chris Payne. And then I'd met this guy called Arno Carstens.
Yeah.
And he had a song called Dreamer, which he did with Youth. And I loved the song. I thought it was like Depeche Mode, Enjoy the Silence. I thought, this is, what a song. And I said, I should do it like Enjoy the Silence. Yeah. I should do it totally. I said, well, why don't I just do it with Visage,
uh-huh.
with Steve Strange?
Yeah.
So I basically started upon writing all this music. And then the guy that I introduced to Steve Strange to finance the project
yeah.
said to Steve Strange, but why do you need Rusty? You are Visage. They're just hired musicians. So why don't we hire some musicians? So Steve called me up and said, I'm not going to pay you a penny.
Oh, God.
And not only that, I've registered the name The Blitz Club
ugh.
And Visage. And I said, you've got no talent and you can't sing. Good luck.
Right.
And then I released Welcome to the Dance Floor.
Yeah.
And then every single Steve Strange fan hates me. Well, hold it. How do I put it? The bad years when nothing's coming in, no royalties, no publishing, no gigs, nothing.
Yeah.
I had to go and DJ and play Rihanna records to people
right.
in clubs.
Yeah.
You mentioned drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
That was a 7-year period in my life.
Okay.
After I'd lost everything. I didn't drink in the Cameron Palace. I didn't drink in, the, I didn't take drugs.
Wow.
I didn't do anything until I was 29, until I looked in the mirror and thought, I've been robbed.
Yeah.
They stole everything.
Yeah.
Now,
it's devastating.
But hold it. Hold it. we're sitting in a cemetery and you're going to get into a grave. Not even a grave. I'm just going to have a little jar. Not even a grave. Okay. But hold it. Here's the moment. It's not, here's that moment in that Disney movie. The moment in the Disney movie of Rusty Egan's life is to leave the keys to your house with your gold records on the wall. With all the furniture in it and with your baby that's 3 months old and say, I'm going to start again. This is a nightmare.
Yeah.
You can have it all.
Uh-huh.
Like Marvin Gaye, who I met in London when he was fucked up and he hung out in the clubs and he told me about his album where Berry Gordy fucked him over for everything. I don't know if you know about
the
album.
The Hear My Dear album, right?
Hear My Dear. You got it. You got it.
Let's explain to the folks who might not be familiar. It was because he was married to Barry Gordy's
daughter.
Yeah, and he was caught out, right?
Yes.
Cheating. And so Barry said, all the money from your next record is going to go
to my daughter. That's right.
And so he made a concept album about the breakdown of the relationship, right?
It was the breakdown of his whole life.
Sure.
And he was in London hanging out with us in the Embassy Club, coked up. A genius, a hero, a god, reduced by love. Barry Gordy killed that guy.
And he didn't have to.
He didn't have to. I've written on one of my albums something called 21 Years. And I set it to music. And then I didn't say it. I had it read.
Uh-huh.
So that's the difference between being a creator, a writer like Chinny Chap or whatever.
Yeah.
Somebody else says the words. Well, it's the same with an actor. He said, I just
say
the words.
Thing.
Somebody
yeah.
wrote it.
Yeah.
So I write and I concept. So Visage was part of my concept, obviously. Which, hello, Midge, why don't we get him to sing? Shock. Oh, they dance around, but I'll do the music. Ronnie, she's a girl who looks like a guy and she's called Ronnie and her voice is low and she lights a cigarette and she, lounge singer, brilliant.
Yeah.
So no, all the things I do have thought behind them. It's about the music for me in the end. And like we can sit here and talk about, I want to kiss you all over a guilty pleasure. Those guilty pleasures are musically touching you.
Yeah, they're art. It's
they're art.
Art. And there's nothing guilty about beautiful art.
The Walker Brothers I used to play in the club all the time, who inspired David Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
And then Midge had never heard of No Regrets when he did the cover version of it.
Oh, wow.
You know, hadn't he said, my God, I forgot about this song. I was playing Jacques Brel, Amsterdam. I was playing, does people know that Jacques Brel wrote Non Qui Papa, If You Go Away?
You know, Mike was playing that for me the other day.
You know that song?
Yeah.
Non Qui Papa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And did you know Le Vion Rose?
Sure. You know, of course. Yeah.
I didn't even know Lena Lovitch wrote part of Cerrone, Supernature.
Oh, isn't that wild?
I never knew that.
I know. I didn't know until a couple of years ago either. Yeah.
Yeah. And I signed the guy who wrote Lucky Number with her, Jimmy O'Neill from The
Silences. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
I signed the guy who wrote a B movie, Nowhere Girl. I signed Clark Datchula from when he was 18. I'm an A&R guy. But I don't fit into the music industry because I don't stick my nose up Barry Gordy's ass or anybody else. I cannot work in the music industry with those schmucky, horrible people.
Yeah, weasels. So weasels. Narcissist weasels.
I'm an anarchist. Yeah. I can sit in a cemetery with a cup of tea with the sun shining and have nothing in the bank and not care. Why? Mate, I just told you my rent check bounced.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah, but only because it's the 29th of the month.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way that I live beyond my means.
Right.
But there's also no way that I do anything that I don't want to do. I met this guy in L.A. and he's the L.A. 80s DJ. He's got books out about him. I think he's English. Anyway. I follow him now. I went to see OMD and we were in...
What's his name? Is it Richard Blade?
Yeah, Richard Blade.
Okay.
So I met Richard Blade.
Yeah.
And I just thought, he has this life of the radio 80s DJ dude that I don't want. You can have the car, the valley, the light, go to the opening of the 80s night, listen to my new album. I worked with you too last year.
Yeah, yeah.
I was on... You know, Ibiza Chill Out albums, my U2 records.
Yeah.
You know, I got messages from Bono saying, Rusty, when I heard your tune, it reduced me to a puddle. It's so beautiful. I've got mixes on my, that you're not allowed to listen to. They're not released, but you can listen to them if you subscribe.
Okay, and where can people do that? Let's throw that in now. Tell people where to go.
Well, you go to Mixcloud.
Okay, but where do they find
Egan.
You? Okay, so just...
You just find me.
Sure.
You can only listen to it if you're a subscriber. I did another girl from LA called Kid Moxie. She's just done a movie soundtrack and she works with David Lynch Foundation.
Okay.
And I did a track with her and we got it on the Buddha Bar album.
What's your radio show called and where can people get
that? The Electronic Family Tree.
And where is that available?
Artifactor Radio, but it gets uploaded to Mixcloud.
Okay, so that's there as well.
And then it's on my Mixcloud.
Oh, great. Okay.
So again, you just follow me on Mixcloud. But no, look. This has been a long interview.
Yeah.
And
there's actually a couple other things I want to chat with you about.
I'm going to let you do that now. But what I want to tell you is, because we're in a cemetery and my wife's in the cemetery and I'd like to be with her. In 21 years, which I wrote, it says I'm only halfway through. That everything I've done and everything that's happened to me and any, and you, the listener, everything that happened to you is part of the movie called Your Life. Is that the end of the movie? Is this the Disney crying wet dog drowned rat scene? How many scenes do we cry before you see the light, before you see the importance of why you're here,
yeah,
and what you're supposed to do?
Right.
And how whatever you did, even if you're a guy in a supermarket, you touch people. And you, your vibe, oh, that guy's really fucked up. He's really angry. He's really miserable. He's at right path. Yeah, but his wife died. Oh, yeah. No, okay, I accept it then. Well, no. That was 2011. No. You have to get up every day and start life from that day.
Yeah.
And say, hey, what shit's coming on my door today? And everybody in the movie theater goes, you can deal with it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what to do.
You can. You do know what to do. Yeah.
Listen, mate, I'm not talking about go run a 5 mile, you know, I can't run for a bus. No, you got to get real here. When I say you can do it, when somebody says, will you perform the Visage music? And I go, how am I going to do it? Well, that's all that research I'm doing. And then you look at, well, how does Eminem do it? How do they do the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
How do they put that stage up and take it down in 15 minutes? How do they do it? Maybe contact somebody and they tell you some information. Well, the way I look at the movie of your life, if you're listening to this radio show, is you've started on a journey, destination unknown.
Right.
Life is the journey. You don't know where you're going and you don't know when you're going to get thirsty and tired and robbed and wake up and your car's been stolen.
Yeah.
All the shit that goes with the journey called life. But you're still on that journey.
Right.
It doesn't end halfway down Route 66 in some sleazy little fucking B&B.
Unless you decide it does.
Well, you're taking the easy way out. Why would you do that? We just bought some more popcorn. We want to see the end.
That's right.
We want to see the end. We want to see you get out
of
that.
It'd be a shit movie if it just stopped there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be a shit movie if it just stopped there. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the point. The point is we have our Disney drowning dog moments and floating children's toys moments. Yeah. We have the tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, like in that movie with David Lynch where they have the car crash and the girl's walking around putting her finger into her skull.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's horrific tragedy, but it was just a car crash. You can make more out of it. Yeah. And there's zoom in on a child's toy.
Yeah.
Like they do in plane crashes.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we want to get more readers. You can make a song and dance about your tragedy.
Yeah.
Or shut up like I did, right? Until you get to bus pass age.
Yeah.
Then you're like some old veteran going, well, I could tell you a few stories. You know, yeah. Don't tell us your stories about the guy who carried his own arm.
Yeah.
And had it sewn back on. So the point really is about that the poor me a drink. First of all, you don't need a drink.
Right.
Second of all, you're not poor. When I walk past a homeless guy, I go, he's got limbs. Wow, he could actually walk. There are people who can't walk and they're not begging. And they go, yeah, because he's got pride. No, it's not about pride. I was homeless. What? You know that? Yeah, it's all right for you. Well, I was homeless. Well, how did you get out of that? I went down to the council and said, I'm homeless. And they said, get to the back of the line. And I was there for 8 hours. You know that one?
No, I didn't know that.
No, that's how it works.
Okay.
When you need something,
yeah,
anything,
yeah,
and you're in need in this country, even worse in America.
Oh, much worse, yeah.
When you're in need, something in you as a person becomes like, you watch those pet rescue shows. You see those animals and they've been living on the streets and they've been beaten. But that's the same for human beings. And they get picked up and they get showered and get taken care of. Yeah, that doesn't happen to human beings.
Right.
They wish it did.
Yeah.
They just get thrown in a cell. They get cops beating them up. They get junkies. It just gets worse and worse and worse. And they're like dying.
Yeah.
Then when you go, we made a movie about it here. A British director made a movie about a guy who had a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And he went down to the, I can't work. And they go, well, we don't give you any handout. And he's like, well, I've worked my whole life and I'm entitled. And they're going, yeah, but you have to fill in this form, this form, this form, this form. And you have to go through this really demoralizing, horrible. 9 out of 10 people go, you know what? I don't need this. I'm going home.
Yeah.
And a month later, I can't pay the bill, like me.
Right.
And then you get a reminder. Yeah, but it's only a leap year. But what about if I couldn't pay the rent?
Right.
What about if I didn't have any work? What about if I had no food? Then you're in need. Then you have to go back again. And then it's the same guy going, hi, did you fill in the form? You have to say, I can't read. Somebody told you that. What? I can't read. I need assistance. Oh, you should have told us that. And what happens is you end up, oh, that worked. Like Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
The film about lying.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly you go, I've got to lie. Oh, okay. And I'm physically, I can't, you know, and they go, well, have you got a doctor to prove that? And you go to a doctor, you go, I can't walk. And you have to lie.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, do you need a sick note? Yeah, I need a sick note. Ah, you need a sick note. Here's the sick note.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you lie your way back into the real world,
yes,
which is supposed to be living an honest life. And you work out that nobody's honest. They're all lying.
Right.
All the politicians, all the systems, all the banks, everyone's a liar.
Yeah.
And you go, that's where I went wrong in the movie.
Yeah.
I'm so honest. I was honest all the time. I want to celebrate only this year, 40 years since Midura, Rusty Egan, and all the musicians, in between all their other bands and in between DJing at the Blitz Club, made some amazing music. The first two albums, obviously, the next album sucked because it was all over.
Yeah.
But it had some good ideas, including Love Glove and Yesterday's Shadow. Okay, so let's just stick to the first two albums.
Yeah, right? The Anvil
and
the
then
first record.
Pleasure Boys was quite good and The Break was a massive... Yeah. Okay, fine. So... No, you're not allowed to do that because you won't be Visage, because Visage is a name and the name is a brand, and the brand was registered in 2009 by John Pitcher, who owns Visage and the Blitz. I said, I don't care. Sue me.
Right. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Stop me performing my music.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to go ahead.
Right.
And then I'll get a letter from a lawyer. I'll go, fuck off. I'm performing my music.
It's mine. I made
it. I made it.
Yeah.
And not only that, Steve owes me £118,000 plus 50% of the income of everything he made from all of those other albums. Have I asked you for a dime? No. Because as far as I was concerned, it wasn't Visage. It was Steve Strange with a bloke who stole the brand, called it Visage, put his picture on a cover, and guess what? I think he stole off Steve.
Why not?
If
that's the way he operates, of course he's going to do
him
too. Yeah.
Yeah, you're all thieves. End of the day. We made and wrote the music. Like I told you, I wrote Blocks and Blocks in Berlin. You know, Steve wrote the lyrics of a song called Tar. And then I got told by Andy Chazowski, who managed Adam and the Ants and was the owner of the Vortex Club and the Roxy Punk Club.
Okay, yeah.
Andy.
Yeah.
And the Fridge in Brixton.
Uh-huh.
Really amazing guy. He said, oh, that song came from the band with Vince Ely. So I don't even know if he wrote that. But he said, I've got an idea for a song about smoking. So we said, all right, we'll do your song. Anyway, without bitching, because I don't like to bitch, as I said, sue me because there's nothing. You can't get anything. You can't get anything anyway.
Yeah.
Warner Chappell, I hate more than anyone.
Really?
Because they stole my catalogue because I signed Soft Cell.
Oh.
Imagine being on stage with Mark Almond. They make an announcement. He sold 60 million albums. And you go, oh, what was my share of that?
Yeah.
And then you go, nothing, because they robbed it, you know. So I just keep saying that. And I keep asking Warner Chappell Music in New York to show me how you managed to acquire 100% of the music publishing company started by Rusty Egan with Rusty Egan's advance from Visage. So why did Rusty Egan sell that company for no money at all to who?
Right.
You?
Yeah.
No.
Just because? No.
No. Because the chairman of Warner Chappell Music, Peter Reichardt, and Jean-Philippe Iliesco Di Grimaldi, my partner from the band Space, the manager, were best friends. And they had dinner every night. out on my success. I signed Yellow. I signed all these artists. I signed Bill Laswell. Ever heard of him?
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah. I signed all these people to my publishing company.
Yeah.
I had Disco Ruff. I had Alan Vega. I had Celluloid Records.
Yeah.
I mean, I had so many. And Time Zone and so much stuff. I signed Specimen from the Batcave Club. I had John Klein, who left Specimen and then joined Susie and the Banshees. I had The Silencers, Jimmy O'Neill from Scotland. I had B-Movie, who went on to write Here With Me for Dido. I signed songwriters. I signed bands that had a guy in it who could play and write.
Yeah.
So anyway, all that, everything.
It's taken.
Taken by Warner Chappell Music.
So did they forge signatures or something? Okay.
But they won't show me the documentation, will they? So all I've said, I've only got one question. Show me that.
How'd you do it?
How did you do it?
Yeah.
And they won't. You know why they won't? Because they know how much money it's going to take me to get them to do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I do instead, lovely listeners, is I tell you that the whole world of music industry is over because Spotify is owned by them. Universal Music Group, Bertelsmann Group, Sony Music, they own Spotify.
Yeah.
They own the shares on the stock, okay? So if Spotify goes up or down, the shares on the stock is where they make their money. Sir Lucian Grange is the man who's the genius who worked out that you own the copyrights and you pay the musicians nothing by using Spotify as the nasty people.
Uh-huh.
Spotify are not the nasty people. They're just some nerd called Daniel Elk who got rich by saying, I'll be the nasty guy. What do you want me to do? We want you to pay the musician 000.000.00.7.
Yeah.
Which they divide amongst them all, including their own record label and the producer, which means they make nothing. But we own the copyright. Now, every time you film a band and you share it on social media, up pops copyright. Copyright, you can't share that song. Every time you put something on YouTube, you can't share that song. Copyright, copyright, copyright. So here's the deal, kids. Do not do any record deals with anyone. Own your own record.
Yeah.
Own your own publishing. Own your own copyright.
Right.
Okay, so now I own everything, but I'm in my bedroom and nobody knows who I am. I know. But guess what's coming? There's a new railway line being riven. You know when they built the railway and you had a piece of land out west and it meant nothing and all you could do was put cows on it? Well, now you can build on it because the railway's come into town and the railway's called the Blockchain Ethereum Platform and they're already up. These companies are up and AUDOO, they are putting a device. When you own a bar, when you own a store, when you own anything that the public go to, you pay a PPL license, a public performance license of music.
Yeah.
If you show up at that bar and you sing your song will be registered as being performed in a public place and it will earn money. If 1,000 people sing your song, that money will go all to you, no middlemen. There will be a 15% admin charge for all of these companies, but all of the money will go to you. If you write one song that becomes a hit song in a bar and it's played in 500,000 bars, you will make a living without even releasing it into the public domain. If you release it into the public domain, you'll get 000.7 from Spotify. So you go, well, why don't I just put it on my own platform?
Right.
And you put it on your own platform. And with your own money, you pay a guy to take it to the radio called a plugger.
Yeah.
You pay a guy to get you interviews, you pay people. So the more money you spend on marketing yourself, and then you say, yeah, but my dad knows a guy in the movie business, and I sent him an email with a link to my catalog, and he now, through a smart contract, is using my music in a movie, and he's paying me. And when people Shazam it, in the theater or when they're watching a movie, it takes them to me, not Spotify, not Apple, to me.
Yeah.
So there are no middlemen. And I am not far from a grave, but I'm telling you that before I go 6 foot under, I want to make sure that every musician owns his copyright and that person can make a living from their talent alone.
Yeah.
And that with technology is here and it's here today. And just follow me on social media and you'll get all the links to where to go and how to do it. But most important, get a lawyer. It's that simple.
Yeah.
Before you even go on any site with anyone. You know why? UJO Music, the pioneers from 2015, have already been bought by Capitol Records. What? They were going to be, yeah, that's right. But when somebody comes along and says, we'll give you $10 million and you're a bunch of nerds, you go, that'll do nicely.
Yeah, right.
And now they've been bought. So I've got my album on UJO Music. I'm now on Capitol Records.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I want to take it off.
Right.
No, but you did a deal, Russ. You didn't read the small print.
That's a big thing because there's a lot of times where you didn't read the small print and you got screwed.
Well, even if you read the small print, have you ever heard of possession is 9/10 of the law?
Oh, okay, yeah, I have. Yeah,
I owned a nightclub once and my landlord wanted to repossess my nightclub. So he could go in on a Sunday, change the locks and say, I'm the king of the castle. Now kick me out. But I could go in on a Monday and change the locks. So he'd have to put a security company in there, some 6 foot guys. So I could bring another security company and say, hey guys, you're being paid. This could go on for weeks. Okay. Or I could take the whole summer off and say, see you in court and spend no money on legals. Just get that date in court.
Okay.
In that time, he will do everything he can to make sure you don't get to court.
Right.
That's what sort of happens in the criminal world. Witnesses, people have accidents. They never made it to court.
Yeah. Intimidation.
Yeah. Intimidation. Winding up notices on your companies, tradesmen, all sorts of crap. So the guy throws everything at you. On the steps of the court, he's ready to do a deal. Because you got that far.
And he knows that you're not backing down.
Well, he knows as soon as he walks in that court, his lawyer fees are up, everything, and he can't win.
Yeah.
He knows he can't win.
Right.
But he tried everything to get rid of
every
you.
Every weasel dirty move
on you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've been through loads of that.
Oh,
that's all in that movie called Rusty. And guess what? It didn't end. The movie didn't end. You know what happens? I handed the keys to another guy. I won the nightclub, but I also won my clean time. I was now a year clean from drugs and alcohol.
Okay.
I didn't want the nightclub.
But you weren't going to let it be stolen.
I wasn't going to let it be stolen. So I gave the keys to another guy. And that guy took on the debt that I had from people that I could not send letters to. Because obviously when he repossessed my nightclub, you know, I was running a business.
Yeah.
But I was bang on the gear.
Yeah.
I had to sort my life out.
And what gear was it? What were you?
1994, June the 28th. You don't forget those dates.
Right.
Yeah. And October the 1st, 1995. But my son was born on the 3rd of September, 1995. And I'm clean on the 2nd of February, 1996.
Well, congratulations. Happy anniversary, by the way, because it's just past that.
24 years, yeah.
Yeah, congratulations.
No,
what were your using habits, though? Like when
was a party guy.
Well, that didn't start until after you were already in the music business, you're DJing and everything. So you start around what age? And what did you start with, booze and coke? Or what was the habit like?
I didn't drink, but I took ecstasy. And I found Seal.
Oh, wow.
I took Seal to the deal. Adamski, all the rave DJs. I was out every night. I was at all of the raves. I was at all of the stuff. And I was a raver.
Sure.
Absolutely. Paul Oakenfold was my friend. I was at all of those early raves.
Yeah.
And I'm running around record companies. I couldn't get them to sign the Buddha Bar. Can you believe that? I'm now homeless. Fuck everything. But it doesn't mean I can't spot talent.
Right.
Right. And then you're running around a record company saying, I found this guy. Yeah, bye. He's that guy that fucked up. You know, yeah. He's on drugs.
He's had it. He's over.
He's over. What's he talking about? Some guy, an African guy with like scratches on his face. He had a song called To Me, You're a Sparkle. I went to Beethoven Street Music. I took it around to an Irish guy called Liam Teeling at Psalm, where I'd made a couple of tunes with them because of another Irish guy called Dave Robinson who had Stiff Records.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I went around there and said, guys, but you know.
Psalm, was that Trevor Horn's studio?
Trevor Horn's studio, yeah. He made all his money out of Seal, mate. So anyway, the point is, I found him, but I didn't get nothing. But I forgot about it, meaning I was wasted. Yeah, we don't have to pay him. You know, so basically, I was like this loser that was saying, check out the Buddha Bar album, Claude Charles, the DJ from Le Privilege in Paris. Amazing album. Yeah. Bye. Shut the door on your way out. That kind of shit. So I went to a nightclub. I could fill up a nightclub with other fucked up drug people.
Uh-huh.
So I made a living.
Yeah.
So I stayed in the nightclub world. And I kept trying to get out of the nightclub world, get back into doing music.
Yeah.
But those doors were shut.
Right.
You know.
And it's hard to get out of that world, too, because your hours are a certain way. And also,
I was
you're
upside
using,
down, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Rob Holden had a guy called David Gray.
Oh, yeah.
And Rob Holden, he managed a band, which I toured, the bass player from Adam and the Ants. So we were sort of close, but his wife was the best friend of the first wife of mine who ruined my life. Well, I ruined my own life. I married her. So the point was, it was kind of like a bit, yeah. Well, now I'm Mr. Big.
Okay.
Tables have turned.
Yeah.
So you got to come knock on my door. And I remember when I had a band, you didn't give us a lift or something. Well, hang about. I gave you the whole back line, man.
Yeah.
What are you on about? Yeah. We did tours together. He's a really cool guy, Rob. I'll give it to him. And his wife was adorable. It was just some animosity.
Yeah,
because now you're not high.
Right.
Now you're low.
Yeah.
And now I can now...
Kick you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, he's just covered Say Hello, Wave Goodbye? I own that song. So I went to Warner Chappell and they were like, whoa, yeah, don't, no, we own everything now. And you kind of look like you're fucked. Looking at our records, we could give you 15 grand right now for your own publishing, which you got anyway. And let's just not go into how we acquired. And my friend was like, Rusty, take the money. I was going, no, I want to know how did they steal my company?
Yeah.
Rusty. This is like, take the money.
You can't fight them. They're
you
too big.
You can't fight
you're
them.
Fucked.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
So I'll get the money. So he got the money and he said, I'll give you 200 quid a week of your own money to help you get back on your feet. So I got 15 grand.
Yeah. So they essentially bought you out.
But they didn't buy me out.
Yeah.
They told me to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Okay. So it was hush money. Did you have to sign anything?
No.
Okay.
I was an artist, signed to my own publishing company.
Well, no, I know, but like I'm saying, did they trick you into signing something?
I rang up Steve Strange and I said, I just got 15 grand out of Warner Chappell Music.
Yeah.
Your contract's up on the same date because I signed you to me. Give them a call and get 15 grand. Thanks, Rusty. I'll do that. When I signed my own contract to me, I signed myself only for three years options. But when I signed Soft Cell, I signed them for 25 years. No, but hold it. You could get life of copyright then. I wouldn't sign any artist to life of copyright. And they were screaming at me. I said, no, 25 years is it. And I gave them my advance from Visage. Visage was already number one around the world
when I
started my company. So they said, what do you want to do with your money? Buy a house? I said, no, I want to sign Soft Cell. So that's why I'm so angry.
Of course, understandably.
I used up my own money.
Right. And then got screwed out of it later on.
Yeah. And then when the Visage album... I got royalties for the first two albums. I bought my house.
Okay.
But then that's the one where I left the keys and my gold records.
Yeah.
So by 1990, I got no house, no publishing, no studio, no money, no job. I'm out. I don't take drugs. I don't drink. I'm out and I witness the advent of acid house. And I'm like, it's here.
Yeah.
The next generation.
Yeah.
It's here. And I'm running around record companies going, sign these DJs. And they're going, schmuck, sign a DJ. Is he crazy? You know?
Yeah.
So basically, I was involved with raves and all that. And the only live artist that showed up was Mr. Monday Adamski and this bloke called Seal. So I said, sign Seal. We're watching the football, man. You know, you want me to come to a rave in a field at midnight? It's kind of like calling some New York broker in that film, Margin Call. You got to come back into town from Connecticut.
Yeah.
On Friday night, you know. Are you joking? It's the weekend. I'm with my wife. Blah, 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 blah.
Right, right.
No, we got a problem. You got to go. No record company A&R man was going to go to a field in the middle of nowhere to hear some singer. And, of course, I was high as a kite. I did find D. Ream. Have you heard of them?
No, I haven't.
He wrote a song that Tony Blair used, Things Can Only Get Better.
Oh, okay. I know that.
But in the meantime, it was all Oasis and Stone Roses, which was brilliant. So, no, the interview, you know, I've the movie of my life, at the same time, the listener, the movie of their life. I'm sure they've got stories that if they told me with a camera and there were tears, okay, what I want to do is I just want you to say to yourself, cut. I want you to understand that we dwell on, i.e. some people have buried their own children.
Right.
And I can't fathom how to deal with that. I can go to a cemetery of a granddad.
But you can't feel
that. Fathom how you deal with life.
Right.
And you look at hospitals at Christmas. You don't look at them in July. And you see kids with bald heads and, you know, drips. And you go, oh, it's Christmas. I can think. People deal with that every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
People have got children that they've been told might not make it to teenage years.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, I got a problem. I can't get those trainers that cost $200.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
You are in your world. And the movie of your world only means to you. But we're watching your world. And we're going, can't you think of other people?
Sure.
You know? And don't you see those celebrity type people that are going through a terrible time because the press are in their driveway and you go, you have a driveway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about compassion.
Yeah. They're like, we were in our holiday home and somebody knocked on the door and they were telling us about our husband who's having an affair in his New York penthouse apartment. You're like, your world is not the real world. There's no pain in that world.
Yeah.
There's, you know, you buried a dog once.
Well, I mean, but it's real to them, though, because that's the other thing.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Real to them.
Yeah, real to them. There's like ours that are real to ours. And
Yeah. And I like the fact that my reality check, my homeless moment, my drowned dog Disney moment was a moment of realization. And when I inherit more enemies, because I thought, the truth hurts. So why don't I just go back to being that honest guy? Because I had to lie to get back into the world.
Sure.
And then now I'm back in the world.
Yeah.
Now I'm honest again. So are you homeless? Yeah. Well, actually, I'm staying with a friend. Oh, you're not homeless? No, I'm homeless. You got nowhere to stay tonight. Okay, we're going to put you in a sleazy B&B with some guy next to you who thinks he's Jesus. I don't care. I can deal with that for 12 hours. Yeah, I'll do it. And you get to the sleazy B&B and the guy goes, if you sign in, you just have to come back in the morning and sign out. And you go, oh my God. You mean I don't have to be in a room with Jesus? And they go, no. This is how it works, man. This is how it works.
Yeah.
You sign in and you sign out. And you go, oh, then I go back on my mate's sofa. Yeah. We get paid.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a system. It's a system.
Right.
He goes, yeah, we're a B&B. We just get paid $16 for the night. We don't give a shit if you're in the room or not. So what I'm saying is you learn from your world, my normal world of what I was in before, there's another world. And there's an underground street world. And you go on the street, you don't sit there. You got to ask the guy who sits there if you can sit there.
Right.
And he tells you what hours he sits there. And there's a cash point.
Yeah.
They're on rotation. That's a 24/7 cash point, man. Times right. Square and money. They're like guys working that shift, man. I hope that when my music thing and my beggar thing, I wanted contactless for beggars. They've now got it.
Really?
We got it in the UK. So I wanted that. I created something called U-Busk.
Uh-huh.
The guys running U-Busk have now taken it to another level. But it was just my chatting to a guy.
Sure.
Friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I only own 10%. But the idea was there's no difference between a busker and a homeless guy. But the busker could be next to a homeless guy and the homeless guy could say, tell me your story. The guy could write a song. What happened? My wife left me. I got kicked out of the army. I didn't get paid. My credit rating went. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And everyone's got a fucking story.
That's right.
And it's all because of they, yeah, but didn't you know you could sign in and sign out? No, nobody told me. Oh, didn't you know you could just go and say I'm a homeless guy when you're not a homeless guy? Didn't you know you could just go to a doctor and say I'm sick? I didn't know that. Well, this is how it works. Didn't you know you could get a guy to the steps of the court? Didn't you know he'd do all sorts of shit to you to try to make sure you can't get there? Didn't you know how the world works? The world works the way the world works. And we are just like wandering around thinking the world's a lovely place until our bag gets snatched, till our partner cheats on us, till the bank calls us, till the job's no longer. I talked to a Uber driver in San Francisco who never heard of Elon Musk. You know what I said to the guy? How much do you spend on gas in a year?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I don't know. I said, let me tell you something, man. If you're going to pay 50, 60, 70, 80,000 for a car.
Yeah.
And you're going to sit in it for the next 5 years.
Right.
Because you got kids. Just do the sums.
Yeah.
He said, I can't afford that car. I said, you can't afford a house, but you live in one. Are you telling me you're going to do 80 hours a week sitting in a car, taxed, filling it up with fuel, paying for services, oil checks?
All of it. Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
For the next 10 years, name me a cab driver who said I only did it for a year. Every right. single one of them. Name me one that's been doing it for 20 years after they said that. Every
all
single
of
one of them.
Yeah. So have a plan.
Well, no. If you're going to start something, you say, the world has gone electric cars, mate. Why would I be even into all this stuff if my life was over in 1994?
Right.
This is the next bit of the movie. And we don't know the finale.
That's right. And there's always good things to come from bad times. That's
yeah.
the other thing.
And watch Michael Moore.
Yeah.
And watch the great Hack. There's so much stuff out there telling you.
Yeah.
Watch Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez. Watch how she will be in the White House in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Watch how women are going to be empowered. Watch how women are going to run the world. A beautiful, wonderful place.
Yeah.
Men, gray-haired old fossils. Stick, get rid of them
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Anyone over 65, bye-bye. Go away.
Yeah.
The world of the future is for the young. It's not for you. You had your day, and look what you did to it.
Right.
Where 16-year-old kids are winning the Nobel Peace Prize
yeah.
because they told you, what have you done? The dollar.
Right. But that yeah. kid told the truth.
That kid told the truth. You can't beat the truth.
Never can.
No. But you can Hollywood it. You can say, hey, kid, throw in a few more.
Yeah.
How about a few tears?
Yeah, really play it up.
Yeah, really play
yeah.
it up.
Go for the heartstrings. Yeah, They're going
to
love it.
So
yeah.
just think when you're listening to this radio program and you can't pay the rent, just think there's a camera on you and there's a director going, few more tears. Or you can go, well, the sun's shining and I can walk. What I used to do is I used to go to prisons. A guy would say, hey, Rusty, can you come and do a talk in a prison? And you saw all these malnourished people who had skin that looked like chickens.
Yeah.
Been eating the worst food in the world.
Yeah.
You know, playing table tennis and, you know, been in a gym. And their world is that of an animal.
Yeah.
And you felt for them.
Right.
And then you said, but that's the guy who robbed you, stabbed you, did whatever the shit. Yeah, because he's a drug addict. So I was on a drug wing. Then I used to come out and say, I failed with my rent check this month, or I didn't get paid, or that didn't happen. And I'd say, but I'm walking out of a prison.
I don't have to stay here.
I don't have to stay here.
Yeah.
I can go to the kitchen and make myself something while I'm on Netflix.
Yeah.
I can go online.
Yeah.
I can do whatever I like.
That's right.
I hate America. I hate those fat donut-eating, horrible, racist people. You know, if you said to me, Rusty, do you want to come to L.A.? I'll put you in a San Fernando Valley. I stayed at my mate's house on Mulholland Drive, and all I could think about was Mulholland Drive, the movie. And I was like, I love that movie.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, well, I want to live here. Yeah. I want to have that view. I want to own this studio. I want to jump in the pool.
But you can sit there and enjoy the view.
No, I don't want to be in America.
You don't?
Okay. I hate America.
Not even L.A.? You don't like L.A.?
Down and out in London and Paris, right? I cannot eat in a restaurant and look out the window at starving people.
Yeah.
I have never been to India. I don't want to go to India.
There's lots of restaurants, lovely places in West Hollywood that have a very limited view. So you wouldn't have to.
I know West Hollywood.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I know L.A. What I'm trying to tell you is,
I know. I'm kidding. I'm teasing
you. If I see an African American walking in Beverly Hills, he's the suspect. You can have a white man with an open gun.
Yeah. No, it's mental.
He can walk anywhere.
Yeah.
He can go anywhere. Black guy with a gun, he's shot. They don't even ask a question.
A black guy with a sandwich in his hand can be shot.
I saw the guy trying to eat a sandwich on a platform in New York.
Uh-huh.
He got arrested.
Yeah.
No, I hate America. And I hate America because Americans hate Americans. They hate each other. The rich ones hate the not so rich ones and the billionaires.
That's what Trump has capitalized on. It's all about fear of the other, hatred of that is not your own. And that's what people really voted for.
A country that had possibly 1 million people on the streets on February the 14th, 2018, because I think something like the 100th school shooting, and Bob Geldof wrote, I Don't Like Mondays, and he won't play it on the radio. Those kids showed me, that there is a generation of American kids that don't want this.
That's right.
And they got together. And they got some political people out of their jobs. They kicked some ass, those kids. They really got it together. And then they stood on and they shared their grief. And they shared it with such compassion that millions of people took to the streets. And the White House wasn't in. I tell you what we do. We get some pretty, pretty girl who works for the National Rifle Association. We put her on the TV. She'll look pretty and tell people, hey, an American without his gun is the Second Amendment. Yeah, that was a country that ran slavery at the time. You needed a gun.
Right.
You needed a gun because you were the most evil, horrible bastards ever. And you treated people less than animals. Of course you needed a gun in the house. Those kids lost their friends. But they created something that the White House doesn't care. So my real worry is, why has Trump spent $33 trillion on rearming the American army? Who is threatening America?
Trump is threatening America.
Well, only when Trump goes abroad into Iran, Iraq, or somewhere, or goes to Tel Aviv and says, we're going to move our embassy to your real land, and makes all these, I mean, the guy doesn't even know the map of America, let alone the map of the world.
Right.
You know, who doesn't know the Kurds, he doesn't know the Turks, he doesn't know the Ottoman Empire, he doesn't know
anything.
He doesn't fucking know anything, didn't go to school. So we got a program, a radio show, where you're interviewing a washed up has-been who told you quite simply that in 1989, 1990, had everything stolen off me, and then ended up being like, oh, he's a has-been guy. I'm still friends with every musician that ever knew me to this day.
Yeah.
I did not rip off anybody to this day. And I was 20 years out of the business from 1989 to 2009. In 2009, I remixed Moby. So what happened in those 20 years? Well, you know, 20 years is like going to prison for 20 years.
It's a long time.
Yeah. And then, like I said, I came back, found out all the more tragedy, and Steve Strange had robbed me. And
yeah,
the guy that robbed me, I don't want to go into it now.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to tell you is never at any time at any of this did I ever think end of movie.
Right. You never gave up. Never gave up.
Well, here's the point. What are you giving up? You're giving up on life. Hold right. it. You're going to wake up a homeless guy. Well, homeless guy's been waking up homeless for 20 years. You're going to wake up one day a homeless guy. And then you want to kill yourself. No, you're now just homeless in that horrible thing called your life.
Yeah.
And you can still turn it around.
Yes. There's always a chance. There's always a way.
You end up in prison. You can still turn it around. So I started a company, which is still running today, where yeah. I managed hairdressers, photographers, everyone out of the clubs.
Yeah.
I started a company to do that. All these things that I did. Yeah. Here's the best thing about that. The person that runs that company today now manages Gok One, okay? And that company paid my kids' school fees. She was the best friend I could ever have had. And all I ever did was say, let's start a company and manage all this talent.
Right.
And then, but you're running the company and you're managing all the talent. I should just take my money back. And she was like, yeah, but you're my partner. What do you want to do? And she's paid my kids' school fees.
It's all about doing the right thing.
No, I got the payback like you wouldn't believe.
There's payback out there. And I, you know, I hate to end the conversation, but we've been given the time warning. But I want to thank you for having this wonderful conversation. And I look forward to having further chats with you.
Well, I hope you don't edit it and I come out of it smelling bad.
Oh, yeah. No, this whole thing is an attack piece.
Maybe the political shit. I don't care. Just no, talk about the music.
I edit the show, but I don't reframe anything people say. I just I edit it to sculpt it a little bit, but I don't take it'll be the way we talked about it. And so, unfortunately, we do have to end because that there. But I want to say thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll do a quick
nice
promo video.
Nice nail varnish. I like it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, cheers, Rusty, and we'll talk again soon.
Bye.
And after the episode, we went and had a lovely pizza courtesy of Rusty. So thank you once again, Rusty, for a fabulous afternoon, a wonderful show, and a really delicious pizza. Now, go check out Blitz the album, Blitz the documentary, and then go to patreon.com/Craig and Friends.